Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy, customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. Welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site. And this is episode 626. It is the first, it's our second show of the week, but our first of two Cardinals-Panthers Week 16 previews. And this is our enemy show. So I have Jared Feinberg from the Panthers Wire and a few other publications. Jared joins us to talk about the Panther season. Jared, nice to have you. Welcome to the show. This is a first time. So welcome to the humble abode is what is the Rise Up Secret podcast here.
I appreciate it, Jess. It's good to be here, ready to talk about the Panthers and Cardinals this weekend.
And, you know, the Cardinals and Panthers have played a while against each other. They have a little bit of history. The Panthers definitely, the Cardinals, I think they went through a bit of a jinx for some time because they ruined Jake Delhomme and then had a hard time beating the Panthers after that. Panthers have won two playoff games against them, and neither one of those are playoff games the Cardinals fans want to remember. One was the 2014, the probably the worst playoff game ever in the history of playoff games, where you had Ryan Lindley starting for the Cardinals against a 7-8-1 Panthers team. Neither team played like they wanted to win that game. And then, of course, in 2015, when Cam Newton company just blew the Cardinals out of the water in that game. And, you know, yeah. But the last time we met, 2021, the Cardinals won. So we finally snapped that streak. Kyler played well in that game. But yeah. But I think that was Baker Mayfield started that game.
Yep, correct. Yeah. It's so weird that Baker Mayfield was a quarterback for the Carolina Panthers. It's like it was Browns, Panthers, Rams all in one season. And then now he's had a career resurgence in Tampa Bay, which great for him. Like, I loved him coming out of the draft. I hated how his time in Cleveland lasted, and especially in Carolina.
Yeah,
but seeing Baker ball out,
he's so exciting to watch. He's a better version of Jameis because he's turnover prone himself. I look at his stat line. I'm like, three touchdowns, two interceptions. Wow, he throws a lot of interceptions, but he's not to the same level as Jameis. To that level. But I love the way he plays. I was super excited for him coming out of college. I'm glad that he like Sam Darnold have had, you know, this year it happened last year, but they've had that resurgence to prove the worth that they have. Although Sam Darnold, we know what's going to happen with Sam Darnold. He's going to get paid. He's going to play on a team that's not very good, and he's going to look like
Sam Darnold. You know what I saw on my timeline earlier? I saw Dan Orlovsky saying, like,
what do you want? Brock Purdy at 52 plus. Yes. You want, who was the other one? And then Darnold at 52 plus or Kirk Cousins at 27.5.
I was like, is no for all an answer? what type of question is that? No, I don't think any team is willing to risk their future of the franchise by paying Darnold or who is the other quarterback again?
It was Cousins.
Why would you risk doing that to your franchise? Like paying Darnold $52 million? He's not getting.
I don't think he's going to.
He's not getting 52, but
I think he will get starters more. He'll get 30 plus.
Oh, for sure.
And you know what would be hilarious if he ends up in the Jets again.
Oh my gosh.
Full circle.
Because
the Jets will be looking for a quarterback after this year. It doesn't sound like Rodgers' time is going to be now. Rodgers has got to retire. Who's going to get Rodgers? Who's going to do that?
That's my answer. I don't know. I'm standing here trying to figure out the other quarterbacks.
We're here to talk about the Carolina Panthers. So, Jared, tell us about this Carolina team that 3-11. They're bad again, but they're just now they're at least playing a little better. What are they ever going to get out of this rut of being a team that's rebuilding? Are they ever going to get past that first step? Because it's been what now, 3 years where they've just been terrible.
It's for Panther fans, it has been a rough journey. I would say going back to the first year of David Tepper's season as the owner of the Carolina Panthers, going back to 2018, they did start well in 2018. I don't know if you remember that. Panthers started out well, 6-2. They looked like they were going to steamroll through the NFC, potentially take over New Orleans for the division lead at one point. And then came that fateful Pittsburgh night that Panther fans will rue against when TJ Watt came off the edge unblocked and rammed right into the shoulder, right shoulder of Cam Newton. And that was the cascade effect that has led to a now, I believe, a 7-year streak of no playoffs for the Carolina Panthers. They were officially eliminated mathematically against against the Dallas Cowboys. So this Panthers team has been very fascinating from the jump. You had Bryce Young regress the first 2 weeks. Then you immediately afterwards in week three go to Andy Dalton, who at the time was the first quarterback of the season to throw for 300 plus yards and 3 touchdown passes. And it looked like that was going to be Dalton's team for the rest of the year.
Everyone thought that wasn't sustainable, though. No one thought that was sustainable.
I was like, look, if it becomes sustainable for most of the season, great. But we know what Dalton is as a quarterback. He is who he is. After a few games of steady performances, his play began to really go downhill. Then Bryce gets the jump again after Andy Dalton injured his thumb in a car accident. So then here comes Bryce Young coming off the bench. You don't know what he's going to be. Is he going to be a competent quarterback off the bench, or is he going to be the same guy that we saw in the first 2 weeks of the season? What we have seen from this Carolina Panthers team since Bryce Young has become the starter again is a more competitive team that has taken some of the better teams in the NFC toe to toe, wire to wire, almost upsetting Philadelphia in Philly, which was going to be a challenge either way. They almost took down the defending Super Bowl champions at home. And in those three games, Bryce Young showed incredible progress as a quarterback, to the point where even after his 4 turnover game this past weekend, you have a quarterback that you know is going to be your starter through at least 2025. We need to see what he looks like with better pieces around him still. And you asked about, will they ever be out of the rebuild process they've been in for the last few years? I think they are finally starting to really build this team. Most of their rookie class made contributions this year. Xavier Leggett, even though he had somewhat of a down season for his rookie year as a first-round draft pick, and frankly, it was disappointing. Of course, Jonathan Brooks re-tearing his ACL, that was probably one of the more disappointing news I've I've seen from this Panthers team this season. And then, of course, Trevon Wallace, he was just placed on IR, but he had a really solid season in his rookie year. Chael Smith-Wade from Washington State coming in to make an impact at nickel. Then you have undrafted free agent Jalen Coker, who has emerged as a potential future piece at the skill position spot for Carolina. So you have pieces in place, especially on offense, to really help with this rebuild process. You look along the offensive line, which has improved greatly this season, along with Akeem Iguanu, Damian Lewis, and Robert Hunt. There are $150-plus million signings. Their center position has been a little bit in flux throughout the season because of Austin Corbett going down with an injury, a season-ending injury. Brady Christensen coming in as well. He then had to play left tackle at one point because Iguanu missed a couple games. And now you have Cade Mays starting at center, who was originally drafted by Carolina a few years ago, was let go by the Panthers this or after training camp, was on the Giants practice squad, then the Panthers signed him off that practice squad, and now he is the starter and has been playing pretty well. Then you have veteran Taylor Moten, who's basically Mr. Consistent on this football team. He has only missed a few starts in his career, and it was this year due to an elbow injury. So you have pieces up front. You also have Chuba Hubbard, who has emerged, and he's been a great surprise for Carolina over the last couple of years, and especially this year, he's been terrific. Defensively, that's the issue. You have to find a way to raise the floor in the offseason for this franchise, especially along the defensive front. And I would say the only core pieces you have defensively are Derrick Brown, who has missed the entire season due to a torn meniscus. J.C. Horn, who has actually been healthy all season long, has a groin issue going on, but he's been playing through it. And then Jadeveon Clowney, their veteran signing from this offseason. And then afterwards, that's about it. They're going to have to do a total revamp, a total rebuild of that defense this offseason, like they did with the offense last offseason. So it'll be a very interesting process that general manager Dan Morgan and head coach Dave Canales are going to go through in 2025.
Do you think that some of the issue that Bryce Young had ended up being because he was in a new system, and then given a few, you know, he was able to get his feet? Yeah, he was on the bench, but had he not been benched, do you think he still would have figured things out because he was in a new system as a young quarterback? That's never an easy thing to do. But then to go change. But you think that basically it's not like he suddenly matured. It's just he had enough time on task.
Yeah, so it's a fascinating debate to go back and look through with Bryce Young. Should they have allowed him to just work through his issues? Sure, possibly. But I think Dave Canales needed to he was in the process of trying to establish the culture he wanted with the Carolina Panthers as a first-time head coach in this league. And there were frustrations offensively. Everyone was frustrated with the struggles on that side of the ball, especially with the defensive line and just the defense in general having their struggles. So they basically had to make a choice whether to continue with Bryce Young and risk the possibility of losing that locker room, or continuing, or essentially bringing Andy Dalton up as the starter and allowing Young to kind of just reset and look behind the scenes behind Andy Dalton. And I think Bryce Young being benched was probably the greatest blessing in disguise for him, because you see that confidence being rebuilt. You see that poise, that composure, the playmaking ability out of the pocket that we all saw at Alabama and his Heisman Trophy season in 2021 We're seeing that again. Now, is he out here throwing for 300 plus yards and four touchdowns every game? No. But what's important is that he continues to rebound from his mistakes while also playing composed, confident, and trusting the line in front of him and trusting his playmakers. So what we've seen from Young is encouraging. Am I ready to declare him the future, the Panthers franchise at quarterback? Is he going to be the guy that leads this team to a Super Bowl trophy, a Lombardi trophy in years to come? I don't know. It's hard to say. You have to hope he continues to rebound from his mistakes, especially this week or this past weekend. So I'm curious how, and also a little bit fascinated how this approach will go for Bryce Young and Dave Canales, because next year will be a crucial, crucial year for Bryce Young and company.
Yeah. The one thing that I noticed statistically that I guess probably might be the big difference last year, sacked 62 times for a league leading 477 yards lost. And this year in his 11 games that he's played, he's been his only sacked 21 times. How much of that was offensive line improvement, and how much of that was his decision-making that's been different, where he's getting the ball away quicker?
It has certainly been both. Dan Morgan did a great job this past offseason rebuilding that offensive line. Dave Canales brought in a few guys from Tampa Bay. Joe Gilbert's offensive line coach, Harold Goodwin, the run game coordinator. They have been an integral part of why the offensive line has greatly improved from last season. And it is night and day from what we saw last season, when basically a defender was in Young's lap as soon as he gets the ball in his hands. So you're seeing consistent protection. You're seeing consistency within the pass sets of your blockers, which then gains the confidence of quarterback going, hey, I have a line I can trust. I have a unit. I have a group that I know will be able to protect me and allow me to make the throws I need to. And also, Bryce Young's decision-making. He is not like making really weird decisions in terms of bailing out clean pockets and getting into bad sacks. He is doing a better job stepping up into open spots in the pocket, making moves out of the pocket when necessary. And he is a throw-first quarterback as a scrambler. He's always going to look downfield to try and scramble and make plays as a runner or as a thrower. And I really appreciate that with Young. So both the line and Young have both basically over the last several weeks have combined to really improve their decision-making, improve the efficiency of the offense, and also to improve Young's play in general.
What have you thought about Dave Canales as a head coach, as a rookie head coach at that?
He is a coach that is learning. He has even said it so in press conferences over the last week or so, where he's gone vulnerable about, you know, I'm still learning how to be a head coach in this league. I'm still having the growing pains of being both an offensive play caller, then being in charge of everything else, being in charge of making sure the defense is right, making sure this and that are right, ready to go, good to go. There's definitely been some growing pains over the last several weeks, and especially throughout the season. His play calling has been inconsistent, but he was open about using his analytics staff to tell him, okay, in this situation, do I go with this play call or that play call, or do I throw the ball here, run the ball there? It is good to see that Dave is constantly trying to improve himself as a coach and also as a play caller. And you've tended to see that a little bit over the last few weeks. I think against Philadelphia, he made some really good play calls in situational football, especially in short yardage when you had fourth downs. You need to get that fourth down. They got it. And Canales has also admitted Bryce Young has bailed him out on some play calls. There have been some play calls where Bryce has had to create out of the pocket on a play that was just, it was just devastated. And then Young makes a play with his legs or his arm and makes a huge completion downfield. For example, the completion to Xavier Leggett to convert the chains on third and long, deep inside your own territory with about 2 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. So it's just those type of things that I think Dave is still learning. He has some inconsistencies, but he's got the right stuff, in my opinion, to be not only a good play caller, but a good coach in this league, a good head coach. And you see the players fighting, playing with effort for this coach. And it tells me that this is a guy that they're going to stick with for at least through 2025. If things don't improve under Canales next season, he'll likely be gone. But even with the results of this year, there has been substantial growth, especially on the offensive side of the ball, from this Panthers team that we didn't see last year. So seeing that growth with this head coach, with the offense, and just with the overall effort from this team in general, not giving up, almost upsetting multiple playoff contending teams, that has been a big step in the right direction for Carolina. Now, with those close losses, should have resulted in wins for Carolina, probably. But what I've seen from Dave and what I've seen from this team has been encouraging and could show some hope heading into 2025.
Statistically, the Panthers are second to last in offense and second to last in defense in terms of yards allowed. They are worst in points allowed, 28th in points scored. That obviously covers the entirety of this season. Where, if you were to rate the offense and defensive side of the ball, are they currently a bottom of the league team? Are they below average? Are they average? Are they above average? No. Where they are at right now, where do you think they rate comparatively, other than their statistic, which statistically they are bottom of the league?
I think right now they are still a below average offense, and they are certainly a league worst defense. This is the worst defense, the worst Panthers defense I have ever seen. And I've been a fan since I was about 8 or 9 years old. I became a fan basically because of Cam Newton when he was drafted to Carolina. So from what I've seen over the years, this is certainly one of the worst defenses I've ever seen, especially in Carolina. And again, I think they had to go through a complete revamp of that unit, not necessarily cutting Derek Brown, J.C. Horn, or Jadeveon Clowney, but you need to keep those pieces and build around them because those are your core guys. Those are your cornerstone franchise players. Offensively, they have shown moments of consistency, but there's been an execution issue on both sides of the ball over the last several weeks, especially when they're playing teams that are well above average, that are likely going to be going quite deep in the playoffs, such as the Chiefs, such as the Eagles. Like, when you have those issues come up in crucial games like that, that's a sign of not only a talent disparity, but also a coaching staff that's still growing, still learning, that's still young. So I'm a little bit more bullish than some about the future of this team a little bit more just because of what I've seen this season. But when you look at the totality of it all, especially this year, they've been a below average team in general, but it's hard to ignore the progress they have made, and especially with Bryce Young as the starting quarterback over the last several weeks.
Coming up next on the Rise of Syria podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the Panthers in the context of this matchup this week against the Cardinals. That's coming next on the Rise of Syria. We're back on the Rise of Syria podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, talking to Jared Feinberg from the Panthers Wire. As we look at this matchup between the Cardinals and Panthers in week 16 on the road. where do you see? So I look at this Panthers team and the Cardinals, who are a team that loves to run the ball. They run the ball well. And when they do run the ball well, they tend to score points and win games. And we see the league's worst rush defense in terms of attempts, yards, and yards per carry. How can the Panthers slow James Conner and that run rushing attack that the Cardinals have?
This is going to be a funny answer. Pray. I mean, that is all you can really do for a Panthers team that is just really devoid of talent up front. And they have, and their linebackers have started to deal with injuries. Of course, Trevon Wallace went on IR with a season-ending shoulder injury that he'll have to have a procedure in the offseason for. Nothing super serious, but at this point in the season, you have to shut him down. They also lost one of their key backup and reserve linebackers. So Josie Jewell is their only true linebacker in that room outside of a special teamer. So they've had to go out and sign guys from practice squads, from their own practice squad. It is truly a mess, Jess. It is the worst run defense I've ever seen from any team, from any franchise, from any organization I have watched in my time watching this sport. And that goes for college football too.
You look at the defense, it's also not great. Well, actually, it's a top 10 off defense, and top 12. It's 12th in pass defense, but when you're dead last in rushing defense, there's a reason why, because teams just aren't throwing the ball because they don't have to.
Right. And in recent weeks, there have been struggles where opposing offenses, especially creative and veteran play callers, have attacked the Panthers' safeties. And going into this season, the Panthers safety room, which features Xavier Woods and Jordan Fuller, they entered the season as one of the more stronger groups on the roster. And now they've become very underwhelming in their performance. Woods and Fuller were really picked on against the Dallas Cowboys and were responsible for some of the touchdowns that they allowed in the red zone, where Cooper Rush looked like an all-pro quarterback throwing in the red zone. If that doesn't tell all,
because Cooper Rush is the future. And no, he's not. Sorry, I can't even say that with a straight face.
it is hard to talk about this Panthers defense, and one of the core pieces and one of the most important pieces of Vigero Evro's defense, because he is a very heavy man guy in general. When he was with Denver during his early games with Carolina, and then as the talent started to dissolve over the course of last season and even this year, he has had to just completely go full cover three alignment, disguise his alignments. I was talking with a film guy that I've known for a while. Because of the talent disparity on his units, like if J.C. Horn was allowed to travel with CeeDee Lamb, you maybe limit CeeDee Lamb, but you're probably going to get 100-yard games from Jalen Tolbert or Brandon Cooks. So you run the risk of exposing more of your weaknesses, and that's why Horn didn't really travel often, if not at all, against CeeDee Lamb and the Dallas Cowboys. So, it's hard for me to envision the Cardinals not being able to run the ball efficiently against the Carolina Panthers. The Panthers, I was just looking at this, they are allowing 173 yards per game on the ground. Ooh. The lowest team after that is the New York
at 143. That's ridiculous.
It is outrageous how bad this defense is. And to be fair, in the passing game, they had I felt like they had enough talent to defend the pass at an average to slightly above average level. And to this point in the season, they have. But it's because those numbers look lower because teams don't have to throw the ball as much when they're having success against the run. So when if you want old school pound the rock football from the Arizona Cardinals, you're going to get it against the Carolina Panthers. You're going to have success run the ball. You're going to have success moving defensive linemen 3 to 4 yards back from the line of scrimmage. You're going to be able to create movement at the line of scrimmage. You're going to be able to hit any hole you want to without being touched for at least 4 to 5 yards. They are allowing 5 yards a carry, which is insane.
So, which means, on average, they're not stopping anybody, and they should score.
No, I don't remember a time this year when they – well, that's a lie. They did slow down the Raiders' rushing attack. But to be fair, the Raiders are one of the worst teams in the NFL.
Yes, they won.
They do have one of the worst rushing teams in the league, yes. And they still couldn't run the ball on Carolina, which tells you a lot about that run game.
They have allowed over 200 rushing yards each of their last 3 weeks, and 5 times. They have allowed over 160 in 5 straight games. That's tough, because if the Cardinals are rushing for that many yards, it's going to be tough. Now, you talk about J.C. Horn. Obviously, one of the most exciting matchups is Horn against Marvin Harrison Jr. Last week, the Patriots had Christian Gonzalez follow him all over the field. Based on what you're saying, you don't expect to see that happen, do you?
No, absolutely. You really can't with this defense. It's disappointing too, because Horn is the type of player that can travel with your number one, with someone like Marvin Harrison Jr. or a CeeDee Lamb or a Justin Jefferson. Travel with them, and you're able to shut down a third of the field. You're able to limit your top playmaker to only maybe 1, 2, 3, or 4 catches a game, and that is disappointing because of the flaws defensively. So I'm not expecting Marvin Harrison Jr. and J.C. Horn to line up against each other a lot this weekend. I do expect probably an even share for Marvin Harrison Jr. against whichever corner he's going to face, whether it's J.C. Horn or it's going to be Mike Jackson, who's solid this season. The Panthers were able to trade for Mike Jackson in a player-for-player trade. They traded their 7th-round draft selection, Michael Bennett Jr., Michael Barrett Jr., excuse me, to the Seahawks for Jackson. And Jackson's been solid at corner, and he's probably going to earn himself a potential extension with this team, depending on whether Evro returns or doesn't. That's a topic for another time, but I don't expect Horn and Harrison Jr. to really be matching up against each other a whole bunch.
Trey McBride, the Cardinals' leading receiver. How do the Panthers defend opposing tight ends? Do they use the safeties? Do they use the linebackers? How do you see that matchup going?
They're going to be a very heavy zone cover 3 team. I mean, they're not going to have a lot of man coverage reps against Trey McBride. And Trey McBride, I did see the statistic the other day where he has the most receptions by a tight end without scoring a touchdown, I believe.
Most receptions by any player in a season. He broke Deontay Johnson's record in 2022. So yeah, he's got 89 receptions, 938 yards without a touchdown reception. That's changing this week. That's been fluky. It's not it's going to happen.
Definitely changing this weekend. It wouldn't surprise me if he scored a couple times this weekend.
Yes, it's right. Touchdowns.
Yeah. So Cardinals fans, like if you're the betting person, I would bet at least a touchdown for Trey McBride. I'd be shocked if Trey McBride didn't score this weekend. If he doesn't, then the Panthers may have done something weird. I don't know what. I don't know how.
Honestly, it's been fluky. It's been fluky. He's had probably five or six good looks. Kyler just missed him a couple times, a couple of bad throws. Trey's dropped a couple. And then last week they had a shovel pass. They had a shovel pass that should have taken the end zone. He got tackled at the one. So it's just been, it's been wild. Let me see. Trey McBride is plus 140 for an anytime touchdown score. Guess what? They're expecting a touchdown. Yeah, so that's why it's not very high. Now, I want to look at when the bet, when the odds come out for to score two plus touchdowns to see what that is. But awesome. Any other matchups that you are in particular looking forward to? I'm gonna have my eye on this. Now, does Jadavian, does Clowney line up more over the right tackle or left tackle when he lines up?
It varies. I mean, Evero, one thing Evero does well is really mixing and matching his pass rushers. He does rotate his pass rushers a little bit, and it really doesn't matter which side they're rushing off of. Clowney will line up either side. Same with DJ Wonnum, who I think has been a critical part of why the Panthers' pass rush has improved over the last several weeks, and especially going back to the Giants game in Munich. So that'll be interesting for me to see about if the Panthers pass rush this week can rebound after a little bit of a letdown last week. I think last week for Carolina was just a big letdown in general after there's so many close calls over against Kansas City, Tampa Bay, and Philadelphia.
Paris Johnson, left tackle for the Cardinals, sat out practice today. So you can watch the matchup between ideally Paris Johnson and Jonah Williams at tackle against DJ Wonnum and Jadavian Clowney. Anyone else? Obviously the Cardinals will need to slow down Chuba Hubbard. Basically, is it basically a case of the, if Chuba's going well, the offense looks decent, or is, or can Bryce Young kind of shoulder the load?
It's been interesting to watch the Panthers offense in recent weeks, because Ellis, he did say in the offseason he's going to be stubborn with the run game, and for the most part it's sort of been true, but he's more so stubborn with showing the run and going with the passing game. He's been more balanced over the last several weeks, and especially in those three matchups against those playoff teams. I would say that if Chuba is continuing to run well against Arizona, if that offensive line from Carolina continues to generate push at the line of scrimmage, it's been pretty balanced with this Panthers offense. So I would expect if the Panthers get down quickly to Arizona, you're going to see Bryce Young throw the ball a lot more. They're not going to lean on the run game. But if they feel they are still within striking distance against Arizona, and Carolina's had a tendency this season to, and especially over the last few weeks, to make it close with playoff contending teams, and Arizona may not be, or they probably won't be the exception. They'll probably keep it close with Carolina, because Carolina's always been competing very tough. They always bring their A game against better opponents, much better opponents, this season. So it's going to be fascinating for me to see how Carolina will approach it, especially early in the game, depending on how the game is going early. If it's first half, it's a very tight ball game. And especially going into the fourth quarter, you're going to see a very balanced rushing or very balanced offense. You're going to see Bryce and Hubbard throwing or running the football pretty consistently. So I'm looking for a rebound game from Young for sure.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Series podcast, the SR Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on to make our picks and predictions for this game. That's coming up next on Rise Up Series Red. We're back on the Rise of the Seaward podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk of the Web, with Jared Feinberg of the Panthers Wire. Jared, how do you see this game playing out? You talked a little bit about it. This game has the Cardinals favored by 4.5. It's probably less than most would believe, But it is a road game. It is on the East Coast. It's in the early time frame. Although it is overwhelmingly, the bets are overwhelmingly in favor of the Cardinals. 96% of the money line handle has the Cardinals winning this game. Has the Cardinals are betting the Cardinals. 82% of the spread bets are on the Cardinals as well, with 71% of the handle taking the under. How do you see this one playing out ultimately?
Oh, man. Because of Carolina's close calls with Kansas City and Philadelphia, Tampa Bay, in those weeks, you always, when you're watching those games, you always felt like Carolina was on the cusp of pulling off a big upset. It might happen this week, but after the Panthers have lost Trevon Wallace, who is a key part of their run game or their run defense, and also in pass coverage, and also Bryce Young having those four turnovers, I think that's going to sway me to pick Arizona this weekend. But I would not be surprised if it's close. I'm going to say, I don't usually do score predictions, but I'll do one here. I'm going to say probably 27-16. Okay. I think it'll be close up to the third quarter, and then Arizona comes away with a takeaway or two to kind of pull away late. It'll be a competitive game. I want to warn Cardinals fans that Carolina will bring their A game this coming weekend. They're the team that's going to really challenge and make it difficult for teams. They're going to frustrate teams that those teams are expecting to blow them out by 30 points. I'm sure Cardinals fans are feeling the same way this coming weekend. But in reality, I think Carolina, even with all their struggles, they play very competitive football. They play with incredible effort. It'll be a close game up until the third quarter, but I think Arizona does pull away and get the win, and makes it probably a much higher likelihood, if things go the right way for Carolina, that they may be creeping up to that number one draft pick, which they could have had last year. They never traded that first round pick. So technically they could have back-to-back-to-back number one picks if things fall their way.
And I see this game, like the way the Cardinals played against the Patriots, and they have two games in a row against two teams that are over. Before the bye, they got their team winning, and then they played their tails off in three games against the Chiefs, the Bucks, and the Eagles, and came up a little bit short. I think those three games, and then you see how the Cowboys beat them. And I think, I'm not saying that they're giving up, but I think they had their sort of peak that they tasted the wins. They start up, but now that losing is going to weigh on them. And I think while they compete early, will fade late, kind of like you're saying. I have this game on the Cardinals 31, Panthers 20. The Cardinals are going to really, you know, it's going to be a boring 31 points. Like they had a boring 30 points. If you can have 30 points and have it be boring, it was a snooze fest against the Patriots. You know, James Conner goes for 110 yards and two scores. Trey McBride has 9 catches, 46 yards, 87 yards. I kind of see the same thing happening in this game where the Cardinals just methodically control the game throughout, and you don't feel great because it just didn't feel like a dominant performance, but it is a kind of a wire to wire lead. And the Panthers continue to fade, unfortunately. And then they have to close the season against the Bucks and the Falcons. So with that Falcons game, if Michael Penix is playing, they might be able to, you know, spoil the Falcons season, since the Bucks right now are game up and have to stay a game up on the Falcons to be able to win that division because of the head-to-head tiebreaker. So, yeah, I'm excited for this game. The Cardinals are still very much in the mix for the playoffs because they're in the mix for the NFC West. And the fact of the matter is, the Cardinals should win this game. If the Cardinals lose this game to the Panthers, they don't deserve to go to the playoffs. And this team looks like it could be a playoff team. Not to disrespect the Panthers, this is a game the Cardinals
No disrespect on this.
This is a game they should win because they're playing meaningful football late.
Yes.
And a loss to this Panthers team would mean that they're not, that they're basically pretending. And that doesn't take doesn't take anything away from the effort that the Panthers will give, because they're still battling. That's good to see. It's just you hope that for y'all's sake is that they find that competitive fire to stay, kind of like the Cardinals did last year to close the year. They were the toughest 4-win team you'll ever see.
So real quick, let me ask you something. Let the guest ask you something real quick. Sure. Even let's say the Panthers do upset the Cardinals this weekend. Would you say it? And even if the Cardinals win out, would you say this season was a success for Arizona?
Big picture, yes.
Yeah.
Because what this team wasn't like their best case scenario this year was to be competitive and make the playoffs. That's the best case scenario. And that's exactly what they've done. They're playing late in the year, meaningful games at the end of December where they're still in the mix. That was basically the best case scenario we could have had, like realistic best case scenario for the Cardinals. So when they were 6-4 and leading the division, we sort of reset expectations. Hey, they need to win the division. They do. But then if you take a step back after the season is over, if they don't quite make it, it's still what the Cardinals needed to do in terms of development. They are on schedule. Last year, they were a competitive bad team. This year, they don't have bad losses. The Cardinals don't have bad losses. These are their losses this year. They lost to the Bills. They lost Lions. They lost to the Packers and the Commanders. Those are all playoff teams. They lost to the Vikings. The only two games those are five of their seven losses. The other two losses came against Seattle. And you basically can argue Seattle being an even team with them right now. They should have won one of those games. And so they're not losing to teams they should beat. And they're also not beating teams that they should lose to. So it's kind of, it's right in the sweet spot where you want your team to be, to go from like competitive bad to competitive mediocre.
And I'll say this about the Panthers. What they have done this season, considering everything that's happened, and then seeing the reemergence of Bryce Young, your offensive line playing very sufficient to above average football, Chuba Hubbard's emergence as a top running back in this league, along with already having some core pieces that have been hurt this year. I would say even going toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes and Jalen Hurts for this franchise, I think the Panthers have taken a step up from last season. Makes sense.
It's like the Cardinals won four games. The Cardinals won four games in 2022. They fired everybody. They won four games last year, and everyone feels great. It's a different four wins, right? It's a different four wins as opposed to, you know, how the Panthers right now, they might win three, they might win four games. Last year when they went 2-15, if you finish 3-14, you're only one game better. Vibes are much different, right?
And I will say this. I do think Carolina's kind of on that trajectory like Arizona is. Even though some of the circumstances are different with the quarterback position and whatnot, having a new coaching staff, having a front office that have alignment. I think the biggest key is alignment with both the coaching staff and the front office, plus ownership that, and I'll go ahead and say this, David Tepper has been hands-off. As surprising as that may sound for any non-Panthers fan out there, Tepper has been quite hands-off with the football operations from this past offseason too. So you're seeing an understanding of, okay, let the football people do the work and good things can happen. We're seeing a little bit of that this season. I do think Carolina does win one more game before the end of the year. And it could be this weekend. It could be in the next 2 weeks after that. But I will say this for Cardinals fans and anyone else that's listening to this, the Panthers are making progress. Even though it may not look like it, what they have shown at points this season are give you some hope for the coming seasons, and especially this offseason where Carolina's going to have draft capital. They're going to have enough money. They don't have to worry about drafting a quarterback this offseason, so they can pick best player available. They're in a good spot to get better pretty quickly. So I'm kind of fascinated, intrigued, excited about the potential prospects of this coming offseason.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise of Sierra podcast, Bizarre Cardinals Talk on the Web. We have one more show. Seth and I will do our game preview on Thursday with the show dropping Friday. But this is a big thanks to Jared Feinberg. You can find him on X at it's J-Rod.
J-Rod NFL Draft.
J-Rod NFL Draft. And, hey, covering the Panthers means you got to cover the draft. So that's good stuff. All right, Jared, thank you so much for your time. That'll wrap up this edition of the show. Seth and I will be back later this week. Thank you for listening. As always, we'll be back again soon.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red. Whoa!